It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now, the omnibus spending bill signed into law includes key provisions to help people set aside for retirement. We learn what these changes mean for retirement accounts with help from a financial advisor. Call in with questions about how you're saving for retirement in these times, changes to 401ks, and the new Securing a Strong Retirement Act, the Secure Act 2.0, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Scott Schwartz is Senior Relationship Manager with Spectrum Investment Advisors in Mequon. He serves on the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Retirement Plan Professionals. Scott, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me today.
Good morning. So President Joe Biden signed the Secure Act 2.0 into law last month. How significant are its changes to retirement plans?
It's a really big act. It's over 400 pages of information. There's 92 separate provisions that are impacted here. Some of them are enhancements to provisions that already exist in retirement plans, and some are just brand new ideas altogether that have been folded into this act. So it's probably a good idea to set some expectations regarding the act and all of those new options available. Like many government provisions or legislation that's been signed in, there's a date in which the act is signed in, and then there's the effective date of which those changes are available. So some of these things that we're going to talk about this morning are effective in 2023, but many of them are not effective for 2 or 3 or 4 years. And so as we're understanding these and how we might take advantage of these, it's important to understand the timing of how these are going to be implemented.
Okay, so 92 provisions. You're, I would imagine, just digesting all of the changes the government is making here. But on the whole, do you think, are these changes for the better?
They are. First of all, you're right. We're the retirement plan industry that makes up or made up by record keepers and third party administrators, financial advisors and plan sponsors. We're all diving into those documents to understand when these provisions kick in and then how to adopt them. In general, the Secure Act 2.0 is really very positive and favorable for participants and plan sponsors also. And it might be worth knowing that the original Secure Act, which was signed into law in December of 2019, sort of started this trend, which is the goal to provide more access to retirement planning opportunities for participants or employees and make it easier or provide incentives for employers to install those types of plans. Secure Act 2.0 was just following up on that and embellishing it, quite frankly. So lots of the provisions here are there to make it easier for plan sponsors to install the plans, but also more access to dollars within plans as well for the participants. There's, again, a number of provisions I'd be happy to run through if we want to get into the details of those
things. And we're going to get into the nuts and bolts like right now, right now.
All right, so, let's do it.
One change will require employers to automatically enroll employees when they create 401ks. How would people be enrolled? What does that look like?
Yeah, so what we're talking about is this is going to apply only for brand new plans. So any plans that are in place right now or were in place as of the signing of the act do not have to install automatic enrollment nor automatic increase. So this is really a forward-looking provision. Again, it's one of those provisions that has got something in the future to look for. It is effective starting with plan years in 2024. Wow. So if you have an existing 401k plan or 403b plan in place, you will not have to amend your document to allow for automatic enrollment or automatic increase. But if you install a plan starting 2024 or forward, you will. And the automatic enrollment features will require plan sponsors to enroll participants at a rate of 3%. And also then to have an automatic increase feature, meaning that every year your deferral rate will increase by 1% up to a max of 15%. Participants can always opt out of that. So while the design is set to have automatic features, a participant can, upon hire, say, nope, that's not something I want to get involved with and opt out of those programs.
And it also impacts part-time workers here as well. What is the impact on people just starting out to save for the future?
Yeah, there is another provision in the act that that tries to incorporate part-time employees into 401k and 403 plans as well. Historically, if you've worked less than 1,000 hours in a company, you haven't met the eligibility requirements to start making deferrals and then to start receiving company contributions. The act is trying to provide folks who are regular steady workers but just don't hit the 1,000-hour limit the access to 401k and 403 plans as well. So employers are going to have to really watch the count on hours for part-time employees. The number in general is about 500 hours per year should qualify you for also access to participate in these types of retirement plans.
And a change getting attention involves student loans and retirement plans. What is happening at that intersection?
Yeah, this is one of the most highly publicized parts of the act. The ability to receive a matching contribution on a student loan is something that was first investigated by a specific company that had lots of graduates that had student loan debt as they became employees of that company. And that company cited that information and then went to the Department of Labor and said, "Can we create this special provision for our company's retirement plan to allow us to provide a matching contribution for the folks who are making student loan payments?" And the Department of Labor came back and said, "Yes, you can do that specifically for your plan." The industry learned of that and said, "Wow, that's a really great idea. Can we incorporate that to all 401k plans?" And that's how it ended up being part of the SECURE Act 2.0. So literally, the idea is that if you're making student loan payments, and you're not able then to make deferrals into a 401k plan, which then doesn't allow you to receive any of the matching contributions from your employer, you're going to start behind. You're not going to be able to build your retirement account right at the beginning of your career, which is really the best advice is to get started as early as possible. So if an employer is allowed to make a matching contribution based on your student loan payments you make outside of the plan, it helps you kickstart your retirement savings and get you going with that project. The other thing to know about this act is, again, this is another one of those provisions that is not effective right now.
You read my mind. I wanted to, how long into the future here?
That is going to be something that's effective starting 1/1/2024. So we've got a year here for the industry to figure out how to track this because there's going to be some sort of information that the employee has to provide to their employer saying, "I'm making student loan payments. This is the amount per month," or whatever the amount is. And then the employer then has to determine how to match that and then put those dollars into the plan. So there's a lot of logistical work to take place before that. And even before that, Kate, the plan sponsor has to decide if they want to make that provision available for their employees. Many of these provisions are not mandated. And so each employer will decide, do they want to offer this type of provision? That record keeper for that company's retirement plan then has to amend the adoption agreement, which is the plan, the document that holds all of the provisions for that company's retirement plan. And then from there, the participant can decide if they want to take part in it. So there are lots of steps yet to take before these things are actually in place.
Scott Schwartz has been in the retirement services industry for nearly 3 decades, helping us unpack the new changes for retirement savers in the omnibus federal legislation signed into law. Join in with questions about 401ks, about IRAs, minimum distributions, other things on your mind about retirement funds. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The federal government enacted new retirement policies, dozens of them. We break down some of what's in store with these changes and what's called the SECURE 2.0 Act. Colin, about your personal retirement situation, what you want to ask a retirement expert on the new law, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Scott Schwartz with us, senior relationship manager at a retirement consulting firm in Mequon, who stays with us. Let's bring in Kevin in Richland Center with a question. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. When a person contributes to a 401k, that money typically is tax-free. Does that reduce the Social Security wages for that person, thus reducing the Social Security taxes, and then therefore in the future reducing the Social Security benefit or entitlement that the person has when they eventually enroll in Social Security?
Kevin, thank you for that question. Scott?
Yeah, when Social Security benefits are factored on your gross wages that are earned throughout the course of your life, your benefit eventually when you take it is going to be based on your highest 35 years worth of wages. And so again, it's gross wages that amount is calculated on. So when you're contributing to a retirement plan, it that does help from a tax standpoint, which then each of those years to reduce your tax liability. But because the wages are considered gross in terms of what your Social Security benefit is calculated on, you don't lose any benefit that way.
Well, that is also a gateway to ask you about the required minimum distribution that, you know, new law to delay withdrawing money until you're 73. Why is this change significant?
Well, I mentioned earlier that the original SECURE Act, which was again signed in December of 2019, that was the first change for the age of minimum required distributions in several decades. Traditionally, it had been 70 and a half to take your minimum required distribution starting point. The original SECURE Act moved that to age 72. And with this new act, that age is going to move to 73, and that is effective for the 2023 fiscal year. In addition, because you can see a trend here, this act also says that in 2032, that age is going to move up to 74. Again, the trend here is to allow people to keep money in their retirement programs as long as they want to without having to force them to take a distribution. By definition, a minimum required distribution is a small portion of your balance. Without getting too much in the weeds here, it's a factor based on your age and your beneficiary's age, and you divide that factor into your account balance as of the previous end of the year, and bingo, there is the amount that you need to take out. So the idea with this provision changing to later ages is to allow folks to keep their dollars in their plans if they don't need to take them out.
What about a person who inherits in an individual's retirement account who is not the spouse of a beneficiary? What might that look like for required minimum distributions? I mean, who's in this net is ultimately what I'm asking.
Yeah. So you're starting to spread out then in terms of your very unique situation. So when we're talking minimum required distributions, we're really referring to, in general, the person who owns the benefit.
Ah.
When you then transfer the benefit to somebody else, a spouse has many of those same situations where they've got to take those benefits. When you transfer dollars to non-spouses, the laws have changed a bit over the past couple of years, where folks have to take those dollars out of the retirement plans at a more frequent pace. So we're starting to get into situations that are unique based on every situation. So certainly for the beneficiaries, they'll need to continue to take minimum distributions if those have been in place. But generally, it's based on your age, just as it would be for the owner of the benefit.
Scott Schwartz with us on the board of directors of the Wisconsin Retirement Plan Professionals, talking about recent retirement changes and what they mean down the road. 800-642-1234 to join in. So people are now allowed to make these catch-up payments of up to $7,500 to some retirement accounts. How will this change work?
So a catch-up contribution is really based on your age Kate. So you are able to make a catch-up contribution the moment that you turn age 50, or I should say in the year in which you turn age 50. A catch-up contribution is simply just the ability to put in more than folks who are younger than age 50. So as you mentioned, the catch-up amount for 2023 in a 401k plan is $7,500. That's on top of the $22,500 that an individual who is under 50 can put in. So the max that a person age 50 or older can contribute to a company-sponsored retirement plan is $30,000. What the Act has done going forward is that it has said we recognize people who are closer to retirement might have the ability and might have the need to contribute more to their account than what the limits are allowing them to do now. So let's let them do that.
Allow them to be more aggressive, if you will.
Allow them to contribute more to their accounts.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah, certainly so. And the Act is allowing them to do that by increasing the amount that they can put in on top of that catch-up. So it's like a super catch-up. That's not what it's called, but that's what I'm phrasing it for us this morning. When you reach age 60, age 61, age 62, you're able to put in another 50% of whatever the catch-up amount is at that point into your account as well. So quick math here, if the catch-up number is $8,000, you could put in another $4,000, half of eight, to get you to a $12,000 catch-up in addition to whatever the regular contribution amount is for the folks under age 50.
Let's pause here with Scott Schwartz for a news update on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, a federal spending bill passed in December includes 92 changes to retirement account rules, and we get updated financial advice. Take your retirement questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Scott Schwartz is Senior Relationship Manager with Spectrum Investment Advisors and stays with us. Let's take another call now. Bob in Park Falls is circling around to required minimum distributions. Bob, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I have a question on the RMDs and the incessant push to keep pushing those higher and higher at an age. It seems to me middle class and lower people that have 401ks are probably going to be pulling that money well before 70 and a half, 72, 74, whatever it is. And this push to push it higher, I don't see how that benefits most people. It seems like a help for the rich to somehow pass that money tax-free down to their heirs. Explain to me what that push is to keep raising that minimum RMD.
Bob, thank you. Scott?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything nasty about the desire to make the change. I really think that the intent here is to allow folks to keep the money and not take it out if not necessary, so that it can be passed down to future generations. Keep in mind, the minimum required distribution doesn't mandate that you keep money in the plan in order to take the minimums. You can take out the money whenever you'd like to. It really is just a trigger or an alarm to make sure that there are distributions being taken. And maybe a bit of a soapbox here. It makes sure that there is some tax revenue being generated by the government if those distributions are taking place. So it's a way to, force dollars to continue to be distributed out of the accounts and then used. And certainly dollars coming out of retirement plans are going to be spent, which in general helps the economy.
Well, let's move now to Shelley in Burlington. Shelley, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind about IRAs?
I know that your guest was reluctant to talk about inherited IRAs, but I have inherited some IRAs. And frankly, nobody can give me any advice on what I need to do with them. So I'm wondering if what has changed maybe regarding inherited IRAs with this act, and or what are the variables that make it so difficult for anybody to tell me what to do with this money.
Scott, can you give some clarity?
Well, there really hasn't been any, as far as I can tell at this point, any changes to inherited IRAs with this act. In general, what's happened over the last 5 years or so with inherited IRAs or inherited retirement plan dollars, is the ability to not continue just to hang on to those dollars, but to take withdrawals on those dollars so that they're being utilized. There is a differentiation in the law in terms of what your relationship was to the person that you inherited the account from. If you were a spouse, you should be able to hang on to those dollars and take them out or withdraw them when you need them and not force take them out on a regular schedule. If you're not a spouse, again, the rules have changed a bit more recently that require you to take those distributions and exhaust the account over the course of the next 10 years. So there isn't anything specific to this act, but there has been a trend to push out those dollars if you're not the spouse. Withdraw those dollars if you're not the spouse from those inherited accounts.
Shelley, thank you. Lori now in Shawano with a question. Lori, and you want to talk about SEP accounts and the SEP program.
Yes. I have one in a Chicago bank, and I have $200,000 in a CD that's getting 3%, but unfortunately it is it's through like the market. So it's been devalued like $10,000 already. So if I were to take that out in an emergency right now, I would lose that amount of money instead of just like 3 months worth of interest. So if I were to get that up here, I can't touch this account, any money in this account until next month when I'm 59 and a half. But if I wanted to get that rolled over into a CD up here that I would maybe get more interest from, and it's not based on the market, am I going to be taxed on that before I put it in a CD up here or get it into anything up here?
Lori, thank you. And Scott, if you could also expand on what the SEP program is.
Sure. A SEP IRA is an account that's set up for smaller employer businesses. So businesses with, typically 10 to 20 employees. It's 401k-like. And that there are contributions that you can make to the program yourself. By the employer. It's really funded by the employer. In terms of the question, it really isn't a SEP question. It sounds more like it is an investment question and the investment that the SEP dollars are being held in. If you choose to change the investment vehicle, you should not be taxed, assuming you're not taking a withdrawal or a distribution. If you're simply just changing the asset that's being used to fund your SEP or to hold your SEP dollars, whether it's a CD or whether it's a mutual fund or whether it's an individual security, there shouldn't be any tax associated with that. The key is to not take a withdrawal, a taxable distribution of that benefit in the plan, because at that point the government says, "Oh, you've taken a distribution. I've got to account for that," and then that becomes a taxable event. So, it sounds like you're in a CD that, again, and any CD has got a time frame to it. Wait until that CD is due, and then make a change at that point to find something that's going to generate a better return for you.
Lori, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Let's move to the nuances a little bit. Look at the differences between, say, a Roth IRA and a 401k retirement account. Can you explain the differences there?
Well, I certainly can. A level set here again. So there's a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA, and then you've got traditional pre-tax 401k contributions, and then Roth contributions in the 401k. So you can make contributions on an after-tax or Roth basis to different accounts. Really, the differences between IRAs and 401ks, quite frankly, is the amount of dollars that can be contributed on an annual basis into those accounts. So we talked about earlier that, if you're under 50, the contribution amount for a 401k, whether it's a Roth contribution or a pre-tax contribution, is $22,500. For an IRA, that contribution amount is $6,500 in 2023. The decision then on whether you put your money on into the account, whether it's the IRA or the company-sponsored plan, is based on the taxation of those contributions and when you want to pay taxes on that. I'll start with a 401k. So traditionally, participants have been able to put money aside from their paycheck on a pre-tax basis into a 401k plan. That means that the dollars earned and then contributed to a 401k plan are not counted as federal taxable income that year. And then as those dollars sit in the account and grow, hopefully, over the course of the life in that account, we get to withdrawal time at retirement. And those dollars then will be considered taxable income, the contributions that had been made, as well as the earnings on those contributions, and including the contributions that your employer has made and the earnings on those. All of those dollars will be taxable upon withdrawal, having used the pre-tax source as your contribution method. The Roth source just flips that coin over. So if you're making Roth contributions into your 401k program, you are choosing to pay taxes on those contributions as they go into the program. There's no pre-tax savings. Earnings are generated, as we just discussed, hopefully over the course of the life of that account. And then you get to the point of retirement and making withdrawals. You will not pay tax on the on the contributions you made, because you owned up on those as you earned them. Mm-hmm. And then you certainly will not make taxation on the earnings generated. So for individuals starting out in their career who have a long time before they're going to go and are going to be aggressive with their investments to try to grow the balances, the Roth source really is the source that makes the most sense for that situation.
Talking about changes Congress approved for retirement and savings plans, Scott Schwartz, our guide, serves on the board of directors of the Wisconsin Retirement Plan Professionals. Call in with your questions about retirement. What's on your mind? What your situation entails? 800-642-1234. Scott, as we talk about IRAs in the changes by Congress, this ability to roll over 529 college savings plan funds into IRAs. I mean, if a kid doesn't go to college or they don't use up that entire 529, can you talk a little bit about that change?
Sure. This is one of those changes, Kate, that is just completely brand new. It hadn't gotten a lot of publication in advance of it being signed in, but it's a pretty neat provision. If you're familiar with the 529 plan, it's a way for you or your family members to put aside dollars for a child that is to be used for some sort of post-secondary education. And if you don't use those dollars up until this point, you wouldn't lose them. They wouldn't be forfeited, but you wouldn't get the tax benefit on the earnings of those contributions over the course of the life of the account. You would withdraw them, use them for whatever you needed to use them, but you would pay taxes on the earnings. That's the real benefit of the 529 plan, is that you don't pay any tax on earnings if the account is used to pay for those post-secondary education expenses. What is now going to take place is, if you've got a 529 account that is not used for any post-secondary education, and the account has been in existence for at least 15 years, those dollars that are left over can be rolled over into a Roth IRA, and specifically it's a Roth IRA. So those dollars can then be used by that person for some other great benefit, which will be saving for retirement. So it's a really neat provision that, again, doesn't really have anything to do with retirement planning up front, but the way that, again, these acts have been built, the overarching theme to better prepare folks for retirement, this new provision really does that.
Okay. And so if you have multiple kids, you have, you know, multiple 529 beneficiaries. I mean, does the 529 plan to Roth IRA rollover, are there caps, like what you can roll over? And is that cap per account or per kid? How might that work?
Yeah, you know, this is one.
Okay, that's in the weeds. I know.
Yeah, I'll do my best to give an answer, but also,
Scott, I have four kids.
there's more work to be done researching it. There's a beneficiary assigned for every 529 account, and typically the beneficiary is the person who's going to receive the account. But you can change those beneficiaries as well. So there's the potential that, you know, you can roll money over to individuals, not even who the dollars were assumed to be saved for. So I don't have specifics for you, Kate, on what those limits are or how many per person, but that's a good question for next time that we chat. How's that?
that works. Scott Schwartz with us, financial advisor near Milwaukee, on the board of the Wisconsin Retirement Plan Professionals, serves people working in the retirement industry. Call in with your retirement planning questions or about the new federal provisions. What's on your mind? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Secure 2.0 Act, now law, aims to make it easier to save for retirement. Still time for your questions about retirement and savings, how you feel about your financial security. 800-642-1234. Scott Schwartz is here, Senior Relationship Manager and on the board of the Wisconsin Retirement Plan Professionals. Let's bring in Andy in Platteville for a question. Andy, hi.
Hi. Say 401k, traditional versus Roth. I'm starting a new job in my 60s. I don't have anything really in Roth right now. Would it be wise to stick it in Roth at this point? I plan on working maybe 3 more years, but the money could grow for 10 to 15 years before I need it.
Andy, thank you. Scott.
Yeah, Andy, that the key to that question was the last thing that you stated there, was that you're going to be working for about 3 or 4 more years, but you would be able to allow those dollars to grow for another 10 to 15. With a Roth account, in order to get the benefit, the benefit being not paying taxes on the earnings generated by your investments, is that there are two caveats you have to satisfy. Number one, you have to be at least 59 and a half. Well, we know that you've satisfied that. But the other thing is that you have to have the account opened for at least 5 years from the first tax year in which you opened it. So if you were going to be working for 3 years and then immediately starting to pull dollars out of that account within 3 years because you're retired, the Roth certainly would not make sense. So again, if you're going to stick to that plan where you're going to let the dollars sit there and grow in that Roth account for you, then there's some value there. The other thing I would ask you to consider is if you put the dollars in the Roth account and you have the ability or the desire to then pass those dollars on to somebody else, the Roth feature is a very, very efficient way to do that. As we just talked about, if you meet those two caveats, you will not have any tax liability on the earnings on those contributions. But if you also pass those dollars on to the next generation, they do not have any liability for taxes on those contributions and earnings as well. So there could be some value for you if you can let the dollars accrue there for a while for you.
Andy, thanks so much for the question. Appreciate it. You know, with the Roth IRA accounts and all the, you know, flexibility, the favorability here, I'm just wondering, I don't mean to be down about this, but could that be eliminated in the future if Congress would need more tax dollars, you know?
Good question. Certainly the ability to use Roth seems to have more and more momentum behind it. I think that there is a lot of value in using the Roth, especially at the beginning of your career, as I discussed a little earlier. What happens, though, when the Roth dollars or contributions are made into the program is that those dollars, those tax dollars, are immediately put into use, right? Because you're making contributions and the dollars are being taxed at that point. So really, it allows Congress to use those tax dollars right now rather than in the future, which flips how traditional 401k plans have worked, which is to not pay taxes now, but then pay tax in the future. So from a congressional spending standpoint, the Congress loves the Roth features that is in session now because it gets to use those tax dollars right now.
Okay, that makes sense. So going back to the new provisions for people who earn less than $71,000 a year, the government is creating this savers match. What is this?
Yeah, this is another really neat feature. It's a change on an existing program or an existing feature called the Tax Savers Credit. The Tax Savers Credit has been in place. It doesn't get used a lot for some reason. It just doesn't seem to catch a lot of momentum. But the idea up to this point is that for lower and moderate income families, if you're making contributions to 401k plans or IRAs, you would then get a portion of that contribution offset as a credit to your tax return for that tax year. There's a tiering or a stratifying of what those credits are based on the income levels. What this provision is doing is it's taking the credit and actually turning that credit into a contribution into the accounts that you would be funding. So whether it's a 401k plan or an IRA, the government is slated to make a contribution to your account equal to that same credit to that 401k or that IRA. This is another provision that is way, way out in the future. This is 2026 and future that this takes place. The reason being that it's going to take a fair amount of logistical work to figure out how the government is going to fund those Sabres match contributions into the individual accounts for participants. So I like the idea. The overarching theme, as we've talked about with these acts, is to prepare people better for retirement. This change allows people to take money that they may have received as a credit, that if it was a refund that turned into a credit, was just spent, and it takes those dollars and puts them into your retirement account specifically for retirement usage. So I like it a lot, but it's got a couple of years before it's going to be available, Kate.
They need to work out the logistics there. And the new rules allow people to more easily borrow from their retirement accounts before they retire. How does this work?
I wouldn't say it's borrowing. I would say more it's getting access or emergency withdrawals. Yeah, so there's certainly a difference when you're talking about taking money out of a company-sponsored retirement plan. A loan or a borrowing is you agreeing to take the money out but then pay it back. There's no tax ramifications to that. When you're taking out a withdrawal, whether it be a retirement withdrawal or a termination withdrawal or an emergency withdrawal, those are always taxable events. You're going to pay tax, again, assuming that those weren't Roth contributions. What this act is doing is it's allowing for certain situations were defined as emergencies. And the phrase emergency hasn't been fleshed out any more than that. But a need emergency, a financial emergency is allowed for now to take withdrawals from these programs. And what's being created is what's called a sidecar account or an emergency savings account that is linked to your 401k program. And you can have automatic contributions set up into that program. The max that can be contributed to that emergency or sidecar account is $2,500. You can't put more than that in there. But what it will allow you to do is if, let's say, an emergency is the tires blow out on your car, rather than putting the cost of that on credit card, which is a bad financial plan, it allows you to then take the money out of that emergency savings account to pay for that expense. And then you can replenish that the amount that it would cost for those tires back into that account. If you don't use the emergency savings account, good. You don't need any dollars for those emergencies. Then they're just part of your 401k account balance, and they continue to grow for you. The real reason for this is because one of the issues some folks have with contributing to a 401k plan is that they realize the dollars in the plan are for the most part, set for retirement, and you can't get at them. If there's an account that allows you to take money out in addition to growing your account balance, hopefully that'll allow more folks to feel comfortable about their contributions to the plan.
We only have a few seconds left. What is the most important thing people should keep in mind when planning for retirement?
You need to dedicate yourself towards savings. So build that habit of savings early in your career, whether it is through a company-sponsored plan or just setting aside money with a direct deposit account that builds for retirement. That's the key. Set that habit early on, and you'll be in good shape because it'll be something that you carry on through the rest of your life.
Scott, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. It was fun to talk with you all today.
Scott Schwartz, Senior Relationship Manager with Spectrum Investment Advisors, providing advice and consulting services for 401k plan sponsors and participants. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.